All right, so the last day and a half or so, we've kind of had the intro to game audio, a couple of tech talks, seen some of the music talks. What we're going to do now is go a little bit deeper to talk about some of the things that, the more complicated things that people are doing in games, to give you a feel for the kinds of problems people are trying to solve and the way that they're trying to be done. And I'm very, very fortunate to have Leonard Paul from Lotus Audio down here from Vancouver to give the next talk on procedural sound. He and I have a similar pedigree in terms of going back to the good old 16-bit days, and I think we both worked on consecutive years of the same game at some point. So he's long pedigreed experience, great combination of creative and technical. So with that, I'm going to hand it over.
Alrighty, so the semi-funny thing is that I actually practiced my talk this morning, and I realized that I'm gonna stream through it really fast so that I get to the demo part, which is kind of cool because then you get the hands-on kind of stuff and actually see and hear what's going on. So there's going to be a lot of text that kind of flies by. It'll all be on my website, which is videogameaudio.com. Okay, so if you feel like you're trying to write stuff down too fast, don't worry about it. You'll get a copy of it, very soon. I'll have it up within the week, all right? There's plenty of other stuff up there. Yeah, like Brian said, I mean, I've been working in games, doing audio stuff off and on since 94. The last game I worked on was NBA Jam, and then I'm working on a Microsoft title now. And another game that I'm working on as well is Retro City Rampage. It's like an independent title. Super fun, and so if you know about it, it's a pretty fun game. So I'll show you a little bit of that, not that much, because I'm going to focus on procedural sound design for games. And the thing that just sort of starting up is this idea of the school thing. So if you're a person that knows already, you've got the audio background, you don't necessarily have a lot of time and stuff like that to dedicate to an actual school like this, say, like Pyramine, that this is an online possibility for you. Just sort of starting to get the idea of that. So that's the bottom link there. Okay, so the overview here, really you can split up procedural sound design into three different areas, and this is sort of true for video game audio in general. So this creative side, the technical side, and then the process, okay? So creative, that's where you're figuring out your aesthetic or your artistic goals. The technical side is how you're actually going to realize those goals, right, on the platform. And then the process is how you combine those two together to produce the best result that you can, all right? The creative, so the way that I sort of view the creative side is that you can go top-down or bottom-up, and you actually do a combination of these two. So top-down means that you figure out what your big idea is and then figure out how you're actually going to have it happen on the platform. Whereas bottom-up, it's like you figure out what platform you're using, especially if it's a limited platform, like, say, maybe an iPhone game or something like that, or web. You can't necessarily gonna say, I'm going to do, like, this amazing, like, layered orchestral kind of interactive music thing that happens. It's going to be really difficult to do it on the web. It's a sort of a better thing to sort of orient towards a stronger platform like the Xbox or the PlayStation 3. So a lot of the times it'll be going back and forth between these two and figuring out what's actually possible. So the technical side, really what you want to do is you want to find out the limits of the software and the hardware and push those limits to their, to their extremes. And you want to expand the software capabilities and the design of the audio tools. And the audio tools here, we're not really talking about Pro Tools. We're talking about the tools that better allow you to put your audio into the game. So with that, you're working a lot of the times with the tools department if you're with a larger company, or you might be interfacing with another company like, say, Firelight, with FMOD or with Audio Kinetic for Wyze, and figuring out how you can get your idea that you want to have happen in the game realized and actually work technically. So a lot of the times, you're going to have to realize that you're going to be pressed for the team for memory and CPU. So one of the things that was when I was working on this game, Death Junior, it was a DS title, and so I was doing the music for it, and right at the beginning I was like, okay, I know that we're going to have a problem with cart space. So what I did is I put a few extra really long sort of empty tracks in there, And it's sort of like, it's kind of like, you know, what dogs do when they're at the fire hydrant, sort of, you know, sniffing around and sort of marking their territory. So you mark your territory when you start at the beginning, and then you have to know that your territory will shrink and shrink and shrink. And I actually got sort of squeezed enough that the title track that I wanted to swap in didn't quite get in because they were like, oh, actually, you know, that one that you had in there and now you're swapping this one out, oh, we can actually put some more game stuff in there. So we're, you know, so I didn't actually get the title track in that I wanted, which was an overture of all the different pieces. It was fun. So anyways, that never saw the light of day. So sometimes, you know, you really have to hold your ground. So yeah, and unlike working with film, things can work one day in games and be totally broken and useless the next day. So it's almost like, yeah, you show up to the, you know, whatever, work, and it's just like, oh yeah, by the way, you know, the film that we're working on, we had a problem with the colors, so it's all going to be black and white. So hope you're okay with that. Oh, and by the way, it's in mono now too. So this is something that happens in games a lot where you're just like, okay, all right, how, you know, so if you're one of these people that thrives on working with challenges like this, then games is great for you. If you're more a person like likes to color within the lines, which is okay, I mean, that's good, then film is maybe a little bit of a better sort of choice for you. Process. Okay, so what do you need to do to get your audio into the game? So yes, over-prepare for the worst. A lot of the times, even though I've worked in games for a while, I'll often, it's not necessarily padding, it's just being realistic. So you take how long you think it'll take, and you multiply it usually at least by two and sort of see where that gets you. And it's much better to have, you know, the producer going like, are you sure it's going to take you that long? You know, at the beginning when you've set the time, rather than like, you know, 2 weeks later when you're like a week overdue, because they actually threw in a whole bunch of extra stuff for you to do on top of that deliverable. And then it's like, hey, yeah, look at this, you're late. You're like, oh, yeah, but... You know, so you got to work around that. You basically have to deliver, no excuses, all right? So what resources will support your creative design? So yeah, work well with your audio coder. That's the person that's going to realize your interactive sound design on the platform. And the producer is the person that basically helps you, you know, if you need to interface with other teams, figuring out, yeah, like creative vision stuff, functional things like, you know, if you're a contractor, a budget, of course, you know. So it's good to work really closely and well with the people that are going to influence how you get your stuff into the game. So, yeah, good process is found by making all the right mistakes once and taking risks. Because if you don't take risks, then you're going to basically do the same thing that you've always done or that other people have always done. And when I was teaching at the Vancouver Film School in Vancouver, we had Randy Tom come up, and one of his big points was that he was like, you know, I've worked on films for a long time, and it's quite interesting to have a director that I haven't necessarily worked with come in at an early stage and sort of go like, okay, Randy, you know, I've hired you for this, and you're going to do some great stuff, and, you know, he's like, well, I can show you this stuff, and like, it's, you don't necessarily, like, he takes risks. So what might happen is that in that early stage, there's a lot of stuff that won't necessarily sound good, right? And so it is a bit of a risk even to show that kind of stuff off. But I mean, like, if you don't take those risks, then, you know, he is, eventually things work out and the people that are paying him are like, okay, Randy, you know what you're doing. But it's one of those things that, yeah, taking risks makes it, yeah, it makes it exciting as well. Another thing that he described is that within games, the cool thing is that you can actually influence the game design. So I'm working on a title right now, and, you know, we had the publisher come in, and they were talking all sorts of game design, you know, stuff, and I was able to say, like, well, maybe we could try this out, or maybe, you know, you could try this out. And they're just like, yeah, those are some great ideas. Whereas in film, usually, you know, everything's all done, and you just sort of, in general, you put your audio in at the end, and you can't necessarily say, well, I would like this scene to be, you know, an extra half second longer so that we could get the, you know, the reverb tail to really ring out here to show that, you know, this is a maximum, like a huge explosion. So a lot of the times you're very constrained, even on like big budget films, working in audio. So game audio is exciting. And then, unfortunately, even with film, audio is always last, so be prepared for a feature drop. In other words, you know, design changes. No money. Well, I mean, you do get paid a little bit, right? But at the end of the budget, it can be really tense. There's no time. You have to get stuff done super fast. And no love. Well, people in general, Well, I'm speaking to the converted here, but I mean, like, it's people that don't know audio don't know how hard it is, you know. There's so many people, I mean, I'm sure you've talked to friends where they're just like, well, that audio, they just recorded that when they recorded the, you know, when they recorded the visual, didn't they? And it's like, oh, no. It's like, there's about 80% of their dialogue that they've actually reenacted and had to redo in a studio. And just that whole process is kind of lost on them. So there's a bit of a disconnect that happens as far as how tricky audio is. Okay, so I'm going to give some demonstrations, and so I have not worked on this game, but I thought that this might be a good sort of center as far as an aesthetic to orient my my demos for. So Red Dead Redemption, you know, big game. It's basically sort of Grand Theft Auto on horseback, right? I don't know. Something like that. But anyways, I'm going to take that sort of Western kind of concept and go with that. So let's see. I guess I got to escape out of here and then go down here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you Pure Data. It's an open source sort of visual scripting-ish kind of programming implementation kind of idea that is available for free. And I've used it a lot for prototyping and then also for, obviously, education, like now. So the neat thing about it is that it works on Mac and PC, and like I said, it's free, so you can, when I do workshops and stuff like that, it's easy enough for people to take their work home and play with it. It's similar to Mac's MSP if you've ever used that. So where did I put this? Okay, clickety-click. Oh, so many things right there. And then Pure Data. And hopefully this works, because demos always have an interesting way of sometimes working and sometimes not working. Okay, so there we go. It's all loading up. So basically, this is a sound driver, a way to play back samples that I've developed over the years in teaching. I also teach at a university sometimes. So you wouldn't necessarily implement the audio for your game using Pure Data, unless, I mean, Spore was an example where they actually did. They did that for the adaptive music system. But in general, what I've done with Pure Data is that I try out my interactive ideas, like my procedural sound design, and then what I'll do is I'll, you know, show that to someone that's actually going to code it into the game. All right, so the example's over here, and then click on this. And then let's see if this works. Okay, I'm going to try. Oh, good, we have audio. So with this one, this would be something that's sort of time of day dependent. So depending on, and there's an example like this that occurs that you could, if you download Wise, they've got an example. And so I've sort of put this into a Western context. So we've got crows, we've got wolves, and these are two sort of sound banks. So there's multiple sort of crow one-shots, as we say in the, you know, games industry. So they're single samples that just trigger at the beginning and fire off. You can change the pitch randomly just to make things a little bit interesting. Then we've got some wolves there as well. And so what I've done is that depending on the time of day, you know, that you'll hear more crows when it's daylight and more wolves when it's, you know, nighttime. And then traffic, it's actually horse traffic, so there's more horses, right? And you can see there, I'll sort of, I do have a laser pointer, but anyways, if we take one of these guys here, is that this is midnight, and then this is sort of high noon. And then over here, that's midnight on the other end. So as we scroll through on the sort of the guy at the top there, it's like we're scrolling through the volume curves for all of these. And then also for here, for the wolves, we've also got a probability curve as well. So it's sort of as things get louder, there's more, not only are they louder, but it's more probable that they'll play back as well. So as the volume decays, that sort of somewhat matched that with the probability that, you know, it'll actually trigger something. So let's have a listen to this. Okay, so I should be able to just move this and it'll work. Yeah, there, great. So right now, if you look up, I'm not quite that tall, but good time at the top there. Okay, that's our time. So it's a 24-hour clock. And so this is, you know, this is at midnight. You know, you hear the crickets, you know, they're all happy. And then if I turn on the wolves, then we'll start hearing some wolves, right, in the distance. That's kind of cute. And so you have to remember that this wouldn't necessarily happen in... Oh, nice. This wouldn't necessarily happen in like a AAA title. You would actually associate these sounds with actual, you know, three-dimensional wolves, right? This is just sort of a way of painting sort of an audio kind of tapestry procedurally. Okay, and then as we scroll through here, then we should start hearing some horses. So this is about 4 o'clock in the morning now. And you hear the dogs are waking up now, right? So there was a time when the dogs were asleep, you know? And so we didn't hear anything there. And as we scroll through here, we'll hear a lot of dogs. Come on, dogs. There we go. And as we get to... Oh, my gosh. Okay, so now the traffic is really picking up. We hear some crows. And okay, this is sort of Western rush hour. 7 o'clock in the morning. All right, you hear the dogs happening. Okay, everybody's going to work. Or whatever it is. I'll scroll through here. Zip, zip, zip. Things fall off. Okay, here's lunchtime. You know, people are going home for lunch, maybe. All right, scroll through here again. Get to about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Things are picking up again. There's rush hour again. More horses. Then eventually things will die down again as things get dark, right? So at 2100 hours. And... there we are, middle of the night. Okay, so sort of shows how you can do some procedural type things there with an ambience. Okay, next one we've got here is this one is like a reactive ambience. So if we turn on the birds, okay, there's our birdies, right? So the birds are one shots. Okay, and then we've got wind, and the wind and the flies are inversely proportional, so that means that, you know, the more flies there are, you know, that means that it's not as windy and vice versa, okay? And how do I do this here? I gotta turn up the, so like this, oh yeah, there we go. There's our frogs, there's our flies, and so you can see, if I have no wind, then I have flies, and then I've got it so that if I turn the wind up, you know, that sort of blows the flies away. I haven't coded it so that there's less birds, right? But I guess I could do that too, right? So there's now more flies again. You can see how, like, visually on the little volume slider there, how that's working. Okay? And then the nice thing is that if we shoot a gun... Oh my gosh. Okay, the birds went away. Okay, and then the frogs, they eventually come back, right? And then we'll start hearing birds again too. See the slider raising up there? Right? So this is a way that you could make it such that the ambience, like the sound, reacts to what you actually do in the game. You know, you shoot off a gun, and in real life, you kind of expect the animals to go like, okay, time to hide. Okay? So you can do that in your sound design as well. And this is sort of, you know, for stuff that's kind of behind you, I guess. Oops, come on, flies, get down there. And I don't want any birds either, but anyway. Okay, next one. This one here, what I did, I was actually just looking at FMOD, and they've done this in a recent version, sort of a granulation. So what they've done is they've allow you to send a pool of samples that are chopped up on transients. And so with this, what I've done is I've chopped up the sound of a train going over train trestles on the attack. So every time you hear a clank, right, then I cut out that segment. And then what I can do is that I can randomize. In this case, I've got a pool of 21 of these sounds, okay? And then it just randomly goes between those ones. So instead of having a loop that's, you know, however long, I'm actually just randomizing between. I play this chunk, and then when that one's done, it goes like, okay, I'll play that one next, and then this one. So every clunk, and I can cut on the transient, because then you don't have the clicks and pops that might happen, okay? So this is sort of a granular kind of idea, right? So every time it flashes, it's actually playing a new sample, right? So that was sample number 2, that's sample number 6, that's number 4, that's number 12, right? And so you could let that run for a while, and it wouldn't get super repetitive. Well, I mean, it's a repetitive sound in nature, but still, you know, that's an idea there that you could use this granulation thing for. Okay, so there's that guy. I've got the train, so train engine with this. I've got 3 samples that I crossfade between each other. All right, so let's try this out. Come on, train. There we go. So I've got volume and intensity. So and it's I didn't really do a great job on the sample, so when they crossfade, you can hear the difference. So. Okay, all right, something like that. Something the Lumiere brothers would be happy with if they had had sound back in the day. Okay, so what I'm doing there is that if I open up the hood, so to speak, is that I can look into the train engine here. And with this system, this is actually, you can download this. I have this this particular patch on Gamma Sutra, okay? And it's called, I think it's called Prototyping for Video Games or something like that. It was, I did this article a while ago, or you can look at it on my website as well. So this is a way of simulating an engine that happens a lot in games, where you take three samples and you basically just crossfade or volume adjust between them depending on intensity, all right? So I've sort of gone with the idea of distance here with intensity, but if you wanted to, you can kind of look and see. I've got different levels here for low, medium, and high, so yellow, orange, and red there. And then also, I'm also scaling up the pitch, which of course, it's not pitch, it's playback rate, right? Pitch is a perceived quality, but, you know, everybody calls it pitch. So if I hit test here, and if you look at those sliders on the right-hand side, you should see there's low going down, there's the medium sample, there's the high sample. Okay, so you see how that works? And if you're watching as well with your third eye, then you can see that the pitch was also changing there a little bit, I think, too. Let's triple check that. So if I turn this guy on, comme ça. Yeah, it goes up a little bit. Okay, so it's basically just sort of... So that means that I get a little bit of variation if I'm playing back the same sample, but I'm, you know, I'm changing the intensity, right? Okay, so that's what's going on there. And then my last example here, it's kind of funny. I wanted to try out something that, with the one with the train trestles, doing the granular kind of chopping up thing kind of worked. But I wanted to try it with horses' hooves, because I was like, oh, okay, that, you know, every time a horse's hoof kind of falls, I'll cut on the transient there. But it's kind of funny, because it sounds like a bunch of drunken horses, so I thought it was kind of cute. It's like, which direction is that horse going? It's like sideways. Okay, he's going forwards. Yeah. But anyways, you see that with certain sounds, there's a cadence to them that's actually quite complicated. And so Brian was talking earlier, one of the trickiest things to try and do is a car engine. It's a hideously complicated instrument, you know. I mean, they spend a lot of time even, you know, tuning the sound of engines that's not necessarily so that it sounds better, not necessarily for performance, right? So try and figure that one out in games as well. Okay, so those were my demos with this guy so far, and I wanted to show you a little bit of granulation stuff as well, which I don't think I've shown before. What I'm doing here is that I am doing actual granulation of the sound, chopping it up into very small little chunks. So with this, what
this
I'm... Okay, so... Turn that off for a sec. Is that with this one is available on the site as well. Actually, not this particular version. I don't quite have this sort of modulation thing happening, but the surround is available. So the neat thing with granulation, I don't have enough time to get into it. I do have, once again, there's a lot of the background information on my website, so have a look at that. I'm going to be talking at... the London Audio Engineering Society in February on granulation specifically. so I'll have more details then. But what I'm doing here is that basically I have 8 grains and I can put these into a surround field here. So that's kind of neat is that what you could do with granulation is that you could take, say, a rain recording that's just mono and you could split it into these grains and make it so that it actually sounds like it's occupying the entire surround field by having grains that appear in all different sort of XY locations. What I'm doing with this particular sample is that it's a vocal sample and I'm just gently modifying the playback. It's sort of like the what I call the tempo, so how fast it's going through the grains, okay? So it's similar to when you talk faster or when you talk slower, like you draw sort of things out. So let's have a listen to what that sounds like. And so this is, it's not too bad. What it's doing is it's taking 8 grains and it's chopping them in, the sample itself, into durations of 50 milliseconds each. I'd play with some of the parameters, but, you know, then it would, whatever. You can play with it on your own, too.
Dense,
so you can see the speed is being modulated.
Dense with rusted roots, this new wilderness. Clotted, dense with rusted roots, this new wilderness. Clotted, dense with rusted roots, this new wilderness. Clotted, dense with rusted roots, this new wilderness.
Right? So compare that.
Dense with rusted.
Okay, so that was modulating slightly. So what you could do in a game is that if you granulate, you know, say your speech, and this is a very simple granulation engine. If you've ever used, you know, Ableton Live, anybody? Yeah? Yes. Okay, great. Grand. One of the big things with that product is that they did a really good implementation of, basically granulating the sound so that you can do, you can change the tempo, you can also change the swing, you know, where you've got your little warp markers and stuff like that, right? So they have a very good granulation engine in there. So it'd be cool if you could do that with games. This is a very simple one. So there are some artifacts, of course, but it's a neat way of taking one sample and you could make it so that that sample just has a lot more playability to it, a lot more life. Whereas if I turn off the modulation here, things will probably get pretty monotonous quite quickly.
With rusted roots, this new wilderness. Clotted, dense with rusted roots, this new wilderness. Clotted, dense with rusted roots, this new wilderness. Clotted,
right, and then you put the modulation on.
Roots, this new wilderness,
right?
Clotted, dense with rusted roots, this new wilderness. Clotted, dense with rusted roots, this new wilderness.
Okay.
Clotted, dense with rusted roots, this new
Bink. Okay, so there are some demos there, and that will allow me to. Oh my gosh! Okay, I can do this. Okay, so back to the PowerPoint-ish thing here. So yeah, there were some demos, and if we go through sort of what was going on there, simple ambience, you know, this is what you typically do with games. You basically just produce a loop, okay? How do we make it sound good over a long period of time? Well, you use compression. These days you can use, you know, Ogg Vorbis. You can use, you know, all sorts of different frequency-dependent sort of compression schemes. I do my loop editing stuff in Wavelab. If you're like Mac heavy like myself, now is that you know it's available for Mac finally. I used to use Peak, and so now I can finally use Wavelab. So when you're doing loops, of course, you know, you do the figure out where you're going to put the start and the end. You match the slope of the start and the end. You with Wavelab, you can live audition the loop. You don't have to stop, change the loop points. You can actually hear it in real time. When you overlap, like if you have a something that you don't like in the loop, you can actually chop it out in the montage and then overlap those, and it does real-time crossfading for you. You can crossfade what's called crossfade looping. You take the end of the loop and the start of the loop, and you mix a little bit of the start and the end together. That's good for sort of constant things. You want to make sure that you don't have the volume changing too much or changing the pitch too much. If you change the pitch a lot, then you'll have problems often with artifacting. Spectral editing is kind of cool in Wavelab as well. The layered ambience here, this was like what we heard with, you know, well, a couple of them there. Say if you've got the frogs and the crickets, and instead of baking those into one stereo file or even surround, what you can do is you can make those loops to slightly different lengths, which is like asymmetric loops, right? And then what happens is that as those loops play out, that they won't necessarily go ka-chung, you know, like where they hit the, whatever, 15 seconds, and then loop. Like, they'll be a slightly bit out of sync, and so that you'll get, you know, this loop that will have a little bit more variation to it. So, you know, yeah, of course, you know, we had frogs, wind, birds, and flies, and, yeah, they reacted to a gunshot, and there, you know, the flies and the wind were inversely proportionate. So our idea with procedural sound design is to generate our audio in real time, you know, as the game's running. And it's been used in games since the beginning, because when we started out with games, didn't actually even have samples. We had to use synthesis and be a little bit smart about how you're actually doing the synthesis. Parametric, basically you're getting stuff from the game, usually the physics side of things, from the title that you're working on. Generative means that you're generating it, yeah, like making it in real time, and so it becomes flexible. Instead of, you know, pre-baking out a loop, it's much better to have like these sort of like, you know, procedural kind of ideas that can happen. And it's, you know, these procedural or like sort of, you know, synthesis ideas, you know, they don't have to, you know, granulation is not a be-all, end-all. It's great, you know, 90% of the time samples are good enough. And then the rest, you know, you can do some tricky things. Like in Need for Speed, I know that they do granulation with their engines. So to get a really good sound design, it's great to have a little bit of, you know, adding this sort of procedural part of it. Okay? So, yeah, it's good not to bake your stuff. It's better to have it sort of, you know, make it so that it you can change the parameters until the last minute. Time of day, you know, we heard this, right? So this method, like I said, would probably be better used in a mobile, handheld, or a sort of online title. You know, it's just sort of a basic way of doing ambiences. Our gunshots here, this is another idea of how you increase variations. Like if you're in a, if you're in a boxing game or something like that, or like in this case, you know, gunshots, you hear that kind of sound all the time. So, and I'm sure Jay will actually talk about this, is that it's great to be able to make this layered. You know, like, I think, you know, the idea is you don't want to have one sample. You want to have, you know, layers of this sample. And now, with the processing from the latest consoles, is that you can actually do real-time effects on all these different things. Or you could even have it such that maybe you're, maybe you've got, like, a sweetener underneath this whole thing that's actually synthesized, right? So, you know, some sort of pink noise or something like that. So this is the attack. And this is sort of the mid chunk, and then there's the tail out. You wouldn't necessarily have to bake in your reverb, right? So that would be a real time effect. And then with these could be sample containers, and you could make those so that maybe there's like five or whatever variations of each, and then you get all these great combinations that can happen. And then if it's a boxing game or something like that, you can vary which samples you're going to play depending on the intensity, right? That parameter, how hard you're hitting, you know, the opponent. Granular concatenation. This is this was the thing that I did with the railway ties. It's just ka-chunk, 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 right? Here's the recording, and then I just split on the transients there, right? You see where all that energy is, and then I just split those apart, and then randomly play those back. Okay. So instead of making a loop, I just chopped it into little bits. I showed you this speech thing. So modulating the tempo playback of that increased the variation. So it just made it so that it sounded, hopefully if you don't have too many artifacts, which is tricky to totally get rid of, is that hopefully it sounds a little bit more natural. I mean, you hear in games, you know, dialogue that gets repeated. Of course, you can re-record it, but it you know, it might also be nice not just with speech, but also with your sound design as well, where you don't necessarily, this could be another layer instead of, you know, like the typical thing that we've done in the past is just change the playback rate. But it would be nice also to have this as well. It's just another sort of tool in your tool bag, right? Cool stuff to do. Simple synthesis. I don't know. I might get to this. But anyways, in Retro City Rampage, I've done all the sound design using two pulse waves, a triangle wave, and a noise channel, right? Pretty fun. So it's tricky. It's tricky to try and synthesize like a helicopter sound just using those sounds. And then you realize the one, you know, like the classic games, the ones that, you know, of course it doesn't sound like the exact thing, but when they get close, it really is this interesting magic that happens. It's kind of like the same thing with, you know, like Snow White when you're watching it. You know, you're like, well, sure they you know, they rotoscope stuff, but at the same time, like there's all this stuff that's like hand drawn, and it just it reads as being real just because they put so much effort in, and it was a real neat way of making something that's, you know, I guess sort of, in a sense, kind of lo-fi as far as in comparison to the real world. But it's still, if you capture the energy of it, that's really what you want to do. And then, yeah, like I did everything in a mod tracker. And so you can mix synthesis, samples, and effects together. But it's tricky to learn. It's basically, has anybody done mod tracking? Anyone? I've done a little bit, yeah. It's a little scary. Yeah, so anyways, you can see all the numbers at the side there. The thing that the Unity engine allows you to do now, because FMOD is the sound engine for that, is that you can play back mod files there, and so you can make really long pieces of music, maybe only using 10 kilobytes or something like that. So it's really sort of, if you want to think about it, MIDI, it's kind of like MIDI plus samples, right? So anyways, it's something it's actually good to look into, especially if you're doing mobile stuff. The train sound, you know, basically we had three different samples that cross-faded. We can also add environmental stuff like reverb. Okay, so, but the problem often is, like, after working in the industry for a while, you know, usually there's not enough time, so people will go with what they know, samples, and so these advanced techniques are often overlooked, and it's difficult to not only for yourself to learn about these techniques, but also like to, you know, if you don't know about it, it's hard to tell other people that it's going to be a cool thing once I learn about it, right? And these technologies are changing a lot. So yeah, it's a leap of knowledge and sort of faith of time on your hand if you're sort of, you know, behind schedule all the time to actually learn about these things. And, you know, a lot of the time samples are just fine. So these are sort of things, yeah, you know, it's, and also technically it requires more CPUs, more processing power for doing, say, like that, granulation, real-time granulation. It takes more voices. I was doing like 8 voices there instead of 1. And the synthesis as well, like what can happen with modern games these days that would be really cool is that if you could export out your Ableton Live session and just play it actually in the game, that'd be neat, right? Of course, we have the problem with, you know, the file format, all the VST stuff, the soft synths, all that code would need to be ported as well. But still, I mean, we're kind of getting there. That'd be kind of neat. And then that way you could adjust, like, the filter cutoff depending on how many, you know, enemies you're fighting or whatever, right? So the idea here is to balance the creative and the technical. It's a tricky business, okay? So current research, you know, this is an area that I'm interested in because it does granulation. Sort of the short version is, as I understand it, is that what they do is they record a particular event. In this case, they've got a little donkey kind of dropping down. You can't quite see it, but anyways, he's sort of going down an incline and then landing on a flat plane. And so they record that, and then they split it into grains, you know, granulation. They put those in a little library, a little sort of book, like the group. And they split those grains into the sinusoidal part, in other words, the steady part of it, the part that you can figure out where there's constant frequencies. Usually that's the lower frequencies, and then the transient part. And then what they do is that when this particular event plays in the game, if it bounced like 2 or 3 times, they could actually synthesize that sound using the data that they had recorded before. And because they're splitting up the transients from the low, you know, the low frequency stuff, that when they stick all those little grains together, they actually line up a lot better than they would if you just, you know, you did the sort of straightforward method like I did. Okay, so there's some research here. I learned about this at the AES about 2 years ago, and it was pretty cool stuff. Okay, so once again, using pure data to look at those different things. Now okay, we can do this, right? We've got 15 minutes. I think I can do this. So I'll show you a little bit of Half-Life 2, an engine that I've changed it a little bit so that it'll take the game events and then it'll spit those out using Open Sound Control to this game engine here. Okay. So let me open up the game engine. The sound. Clack. Okay. All right. And hopefully this works. Okay. So the idea here is that with this method, you can change the sounds as the game's running. It's kind of like you've taken the car engine from underneath the hood, and then you've actually taken it, you know, on the side, and you've got the engine running and playing sounds, and you can actually change things with that while the game is running. Because usually what you have to do is, you know, if the game's running and you want to change some sounds, you actually have to stop the game. And a lot of the times, you know, when you're in development, you have to go back to that part of the game. And now we're getting more tools that are real time. So this kind of, I've worked on this sort of, you know, for, I don't know, 10 years now or so. And so these techniques are sort of starting to become more commonplace in game studios now. But they're still a great, not only a teaching tool, but also good for prototyping as well. So if I load up a game, what I need to do here is it'll go like this. So this is a chapter out of Half-Life 2. The cool thing here is because Open Sound Control is spitting out things to whatever, you could, if you wanted to, you could have Reactor, I guess, react to this. But also, one of the things that I wanted to do for this talk is that I also did this with the Unity engine. But the advantage of doing it in Half-Life 2 is that you can load in mods and you don't actually have to look for all the sound calls, right? So Okay, so if I play this here, escape. Alrighty, so. Wow. Scary. Okay, so I'm going to try to get this guy here to talk to this guy over here. So I need to open up my little debug window. And if I go like this, SV, sound. And mine has some extra little things on here. So I'm communicating to port 7002. And hopefully... Ah, grand. Okay, great. So the cool thing here is that as this game's running, and this is Half-Life 2, like it actually is exactly the game, okay? The neat thing is that you can see that it's spitting out all the physics, like the audio events here to this window. Isn't that neat? Kind of nifty, eh? So the cool thing is that if I wanted to, I could make it trigger sounds. Let's see if I should be a little careful here. I'm still working on this. I haven't made this public yet. I've worked on this for a couple years, and I don't have a lot of time to program these days. I'm much more interested in doing sound design. So I haven't gotten to a point where I really want to release it yet, but it sort of hobbles along at this point. So if we go back to the game, now if I fire a gun, right, this, it sounds like it's happening in Half-Life 2, but it's not. It's actually happening in my sound engine. So if I sort of, whatever, move around here. Okay, let me see if I can... I'm going to need two hands. Okay. Let's go. Okay, there we go. Great. Okay. Perfect. Sorry, excuse me. There. Shoot that guy. And, so what I can, there we go. All right. So you can see there's a lot of events that aren't actually, I don't have these ones coded, like, you know, for me getting hit by this, there's a lot of sounds that are, oh, yeah, there we go, great. Yeah, I'm sure there's, like, the antlion laughing over here somewhere. Okay, so the neat thing with this is that I could actually go back to my tool here, if I can find the window. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I want to skip to the new one, too. If I go to events, my game audio code, actually here, okay, I'm going to pull this guy over a little bit, and it's the shotgun sound, I guess, that occurs a lot. So what I could do is I could mess with that one. Shotgun fire. Oh, great, there's two of them. Yeah, perfect. Okay, so let's see if I can pull this guy up at the same time as pulling up the game. Oh, man. And with the microphone. Okay, so let's try this. See what happens. So, okay, switch to the... Hello. Shotgun. Okay, that's not triggering that patch, it seems. Shotgun fire. Maybe there's a different one here. Okay, that one, see, doesn't trigger anything. Okay, yeah, you can see, actually, the voice number... Oh, my. Did you see that change over here? So if I wanted to, I could maybe change the pitch value. That might be the easiest way to show that there's actually something happening. So let's go up two. I really need to make those larger. And then like this. So if I play that now... Okay. Right, it's a cartoon version. Okay, so what I can do is I can actually do that with any of the sounds that are triggering, but I'm not going to. So you have to, while the game's running, you can change the sounds. And that's the way you really want to work in a game studio, because then your process will be super fast, okay? So I'm going to quit this guy out here. Don't save. And the other thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the new stuff that's got the fresh paint smell on it. So let's go out of here. Steamy. Adieu. And I have this one patch here that's actually not really that impressive. I just got this working. Unity. This one here. Okay, great. Okay, so yeah, it's a nice big mess. And so that's the way I work. I'm very messy. This is a prototype, right? You don't have to have it look nice and cute and all that kind of stuff. So what I'm going to do is that this guy is going to respond to Unity, and because it's open sound control, we can actually go two directions. So if I wanted to, I could also have the game communicate with the PD communicate with Unity as well. So I think the only thing that I hooked up here is footsteps. So if we look here, and hopefully this works. Okay, try this. And okay, great. So what I'm doing here is I'm spitting out open sound control events, and you can see that I'm getting left, right, feet. And this is something that while you're working on a game, you notice that it's not left, right. It's like left, right, right. So what it's doing is it's trying to spit out events when there's a physical collision between two different objects, and it's not always doing it correctly. So if you have things like sounds that are related like directly, okay, and this actually isn't producing any sound, so is that because of, what did I got here? I think I recently changed this. What did I do? Oh, right, I even got tricky and I was doing some stuff with VST. That works as well. So if there's any VST synths that you like perhaps, like if I wanted to, I could load up Contact in here. I won't do that, but so what you can do is you can prototype your stuff using all the VSTIs that you like and all your audio effects that you like, and then you got to figure out how to scale down that sort of blue sky, dream to something that's actually going to play in the game. But this is another way of doing prototyping. So, okay. So as you can see, it's not. I've got the footsteps hooked up. They're not making sound, but I also have the platform here hooked up to this. So you hear that? It's kind of quiet. It's a little bit. Okay. And so, whereas it's not happening when it's down there. So see? There we go. Okay. So it is actually sending out stuff. And if I wanted to, I think I can also go like this. While this guy's running, I can actually send events backwards as well, but I think I gotta do connect here. And then you can see there that I'm generating events over here, okay? It's going this, and then over here, the OSC messages are being received. It's sort of hard to see, but you'll have to trust me, see? So you can go both directions. So if I wanted to, what I could do is I could make all those crates jump to the sound of a beat or something that's actually being triggered in pure data. Okay, so let's get back to here, and then we have a few minutes for questions, which is good. Okay, I'm not going to go through all this stuff because I talked about it. So if you're interested in getting pure data, once again, you can have a look at these notes online from my website, but you can download the extended version, which basically means the big version. It has all the cool features in it, even graphic stuff. And that's from puredata.info. Okay, Half-Life 2, you probably know what it is. This here just says that if you wanted to work on that system like I did, basically it's just the cost of Half-Life 2. And then you need to, of course, add open sound control to it. So I gave that demonstration. Here's Unity, okay? And then one of the neat things is that you can do a real-time 3D preview, so you can edit stuff in the actual game editor and hear the sounds as they occur when you would actually play the game. You've got this neat thing with reverb areas, okay? And like I said, I was able to get Contact working. It's a little scary because it takes up a lot of system resources, and I'm running four different things at the same time. So I didn't demo that. And this is really the way that things work here. So I'll step through this a little bit. You've got your 3D editor, right? You can see it in Unity. It's like that. And then from here, that's where you actually place the sounds. So see, there's those little speakers there. That's where the sounds are. It's on those guys' feet. And then I'm using OSC to talk to my Pure Data audio code here. And I've got a sound driver that's doing all sorts of, basically just changing my sample groups and stuff like that, okay? And then I authored stuff. I could use a mod tracker if I wanted to with Unity. And also here, WaveLab is another authoring tool as well. Okay, and now we get to questions. Thank you. Yes, question.
The footage we just saw, images and all that stuff, that's in that Pure Data thing you're talking about? The Half-Life or whatever that was? where Thing came and just killed you and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Is that stuff in there? And if it is, we're able to put our own sound, our own music and stuff on top of that?
Yeah, you could, yeah. You just need, like I say, you would need to do the coding that I did where, you know, it takes open sound control and puts it into there. So it actually spits those events out from the game, because usually that's a bit of a closed system.
So could we take that same thing once we've done that and output that to somebody else for, say, like a demo to say, hey, here's what
Yeah, I'm exactly. Doing. I've had students do that, yeah. I've had students use this procedure, and then, yeah, they replace the sounds and use that as part of their demo reel. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Is extended pure data free? Or is
it's free? Totally free. Okay. It's free as in beer, yes. Yeah. Oh, this guy, yes.
Now, are all of these programs only for audio?
Oh, well, no, Unity, you can build your whole game in Unity. Oh, and
really?
Same thing, yeah. Okay. Oh, really?
So you can make your own game?
Yeah, you can make your own game. Yeah, totally. And it's free, too.
Same as UDK?
Yeah, so if you look at unity3d.com, I think that's the address. I think they're British, so it may be co.uk, but anyways, I think it's unity3d.com. You can download, like, yeah, the free version. And you don't need to do all this crazy stuff with pure data. I was just showing you that because... For me, it's a neat way to run the game while I'm switching the sounds around. But you can add all your own sounds. It basically, it's got the whole FMOD audio engine in there. Yeah, yeah, it's killer. It's great. So, yes?
When you were showing this framework in Cantonation, was that a Wavelab document that had all the region markers on it?
Mm-hmm.
Does your Concatenator read the Wavelab file, or was that just for our reference? And like you took those and exported those into a bucket.
Exactly. Yeah, I chopped them all up because you can cut by, you know, whatever. You can cut sort of by time, or you can cut by transients. It detects like beats, you know, and things get loud. Same thing as I guess it's stripped silence ish. Okay, sure. I'm not a big whatever Pro Tools user, but I'm sure you can sort of yeah. Yes. So, yeah, that's what I did, and I chopped them all up, and then they were just separate WAV files, and then it was, you can do that in FMOD now. So they have this granulation thing where it'll actually randomize within a container, and it'll just concatenate, play one sound, it finishes, starts the next one up. Yeah, so that's cool. Yes?
Speaking of Wavelab, the features that you're showing in Wavelab, are those features not available in Peak? These are, like, specific things to Wavelab?
The cool thing about Wavelab is that it's in programming terms, it's non-blocking. So you can actually play the WAV file in general as you're processing it. So whereas in Pro Tools, when I've seen students use it, that a lot of the times if you change the loop markers, then you actually have to stop the sound and start it up again.
Yeah,
which, oh, yes. And in Peak, I'm not sure, Ken, is anybody, I don't know, as I haven't used it in a while, because I've switched. The main reason I switched over to Wavelab is just because it's got, like, killer batch functions in it. It's just amazing.
Right.
Where you can actually, you can change, like, batch rename, like, marker points, and then you can re-export your file out and chop on those new names and spit out a new file from that. So I actually do a lot of, like, when you're working on thousands of files, it's a great, you know, I was working on some of the dialogue for NHL 11, and yeah, it's a real time saver. Yeah. Yes?
What's Retro City Rampage?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. So Retro City Rampage, it'll be available fairly soon. So it'll be available in the new year. Hopefully, I think it'll be on WiiWare. We're having talks with everyone, though. And I'm the sort of audio director in a sense for it. So I did all the sound design. It's all synthesis. And it's sort of a retro style, sort of NES-ish style kind of game. And so it's been getting a lot of good press. And yeah, I was one of the three composers. For those that know the demo scene, we have Noren Rad is one of the other composers. And then Vert is really well known within that scene.
Is that sort of a play on River City Ransom?
It actually grew out of Grand Theft Auto-ish. So it was known as Grand Theft Tendo, and due to legal reasons, we had to change, of course, the name. So, yeah, there's all sorts of great parodies and stuff in there. Yeah.
One more question,
yes.
Yeah, I noticed on one of the slides, we had like a low-end sweetener offset just behind the main gunshot.
So, right.
So how would you go about doing that, say, for... a footstep of, like, a big creature?
Well,
I don't know, the same way.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Like, it's, I mean, that's the whole thing with Sweetener. It's like whatever sounds good. So either you can do it from a sample or you could do it via synthesis. And yeah, it's just, it's another layer that you would want to trigger in conjunction with that sound. And yeah, if you have it as a separate layer, then you can pitch that a little bit differently, change the attack on it a little bit more. So if he's running, then you get a more sharper attack for that LFE effect, right, the Sweetener sound. And then if he's sort of walking slower, maybe you could have even like the heel toe kind of thing where you get the dum, right, for each foot. So you can get sort of tricky that way. So is that, that's good?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So yes, I'm done. And so if you want any more information, it's all online. I do Twitter, so feel free to join up and see what I've been up to. Thank you.
Cool.